Good day, and welcome to the city-hosted Market Insights on Community Development Agency's Updates Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mark Dean. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Cassie. Good morning to our friends on the West Coast, and good afternoon to those on the East Coast. My name is Mark Dean. I am the host of the webinar today. Welcome to City Community Capital Market Insights. Many of you are aware of us as a provider of economic capital. We consider this an opportunity to provide intellectual capital. So we have a really exciting webinar today, but I'm going to talk a little bit about who we have on the phone first. We had about 207 people complete our poll, and I thank you all for that. Kind of going over our poll results, a big chunk of people that are for-profit developers. We have a smattering of not-for-profit developers, some public housing authorities, state HFAs, a great number of debt providers, equity providers, and then a handful of people that just called themselves others. So it will be a good cross-section of people today. The second question was whether or not you had done business with either one of the agencies, and we have about a third of the people on the call that have done business with Fannie or Freddie, so that's great to see. Asking about what you folks would like to hear today, it's kind of a new attempt to make sure we're appropriately targeting the limited time that we have with all of you. A lot of interest in hearing from the agencies on LIHTC investments, but also preservation, acquisition, and tax-exempt products. So that will be good. We asked about if you expect to close a transaction or in the next 30 days, 90 days, sometimes in 2018. Looks like people have a lot of stuff going on. We have a number of you, over a quarter, that are going to close in the next 30 days, about 10% in the next 60 to 90. And the number of people have said uncertain, but nonetheless good. Looks like you're all going to be busy closing deals. Your second to last question was just a perception, your perception of the market, from a LIHTC standpoint and just getting the deal done. Kind of an even split of positive, more positive than negative, which is great, and then a bunch of people that are neutral. Last question we asked was your pipeline more robust this year than last year? And that was about evenly split on more or less or similar. So kind of give you an idea of who's on the phone and what their perceptions and attitudes are. So, Charlene, next slide. Again, my name's Mark Dean. I head up the debt side of City Community Capital. Many of you know us as a construction lender, a perm lender, a LIHTC investor, and then a Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac lender. What we're going to do today is talk about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I want to thank you all for joining, but I particularly want to thank Bob Simpson and David Leopold for joining. They both are very valued partners of ours in the debt products that we offer to clients. You know, Fannie and Freddie play an incredibly important role of buying loans from lenders such as Citi or other DUS lenders, other Freddie seller servicers, and that provides liquidity to those organizations, and it also provides a great amount of product innovation, which we'll hear a little bit about today. So just quickly, Bob Simpson heads up the Fannie Mae Affordable Housing. Within that, there are a lot of components, what we'll call the affordable side. He also heads up equity and the green business lines. Bob's got a long tenure with Fannie Mae. He's been a great partner of ours, for the last decade or so. David Leopold is also joining us, and David is head of affordable sales and investments at Freddie Mac. Similar to Bob, he's responsible for affordable housing, the LIHTC, what will be the LIHTC side of the agency. David has also been a fabulous partner of Citi over the last couple of years in terms of providing product innovation and doing some unique sort of things. So as we go through today to ask, Charlene, next slide, to ask a question, there's a couple ways of doing that. You can, the phone lines are muted until the very end. We'll open them up. But if you have a question that is, you know, just a burning question, or if you're like me and by the time you get to the end of the webinar, you've forgotten the question, you can email that question to askcitycommunitycapital@citi.com. At the end of the session, we'll open up the phone lines. You press star one for an operator to open your line, and we'll go through. This also will be available within 24 hours on Citi's website. And then lastly, I had some just some resources on Fannie, Freddie, and Citi for your information. What we're going to cover today, the discussion points, will be I'm going to ask each Bob and David to kind of just recap how was 2017? We obviously know it was kind of a crazy year in this business, but I want to hear, and I think you'd like to hear about what 2017 was like, what they see as opportunities in 2018, what they're doing in affordable housing market, product innovation, their role in LIHTC, and then also talk about, you know, ask them for advice on doing business with the agencies. What's the best way to do business with the agencies? So we're going to accomplish all of that in about 30 to 40 minutes. We will leave appropriate time for Q&A. And I'm just going to alternate between Bob and David, and we'll take it off. So, David, let's start with you. Could you maybe recap for our participants how 2017 was for you guys?
Sure, you bet. First of all, thanks for having me. I appreciate Citi Community Capital putting on these webinars. I think they're valuable. So, again, Dave Leopold, I'll go, and I included some slides that we can take a look at. 2017 was a great year for us at Freddie Mac Multifamily. We saw significant growth, so 36% overall in our affordable business. You see in my slides this reference to targeted affordable, and what that really means is properties that have long-term ongoing rent restrictions and are really built to be maintained as affordable. In some of our public disclosures, you actually see higher numbers where we wrap in other properties that have rent restrictions, maybe inclusionary zoning and others. But you know, so we did, in the targeted affordable business, we did $5.3 billion, again, 30% year-over-year growth. We were able to achieve that in, you know, what was a year that had some challenges, right? The tax equity business was off a little bit given the pending tax reform for most of the year. We saw a decline in some of that new tax equity business, but we actually saw growth in our preservation business. So we were able to maintain that growth mostly through product innovation and going after preservation, some of the larger pool transactions that we're starting to see as a trend in the industry, and really broadening our product set. Actually, the next slide sort of demonstrates that, if you want to call it out. So, yeah, this slide, you just see it, just 3 or 4 years ago, this slide would have, you know, had been much more myopic with the vast majority of our volume being bond credit enhancements. Now you see a much larger array of different product sets. The largest portion of the pie is our preservation business. That's fixed rate, perm financing, acquisition, refi business. The balance is a mix. That portion of this that's labeled as PE or portfolio demonstrates how we're still using our balance sheet to selectively grow pipeline. While the vast majority of all our volume we are securitizing, we are still using our balance sheet to grow that year-over-year business. So this just kind of demonstrates the breadth in product diversification that we were able to achieve. And that was kind of our story for 2017. We did continue to see great success in our tax-exempt loan business, which is the next slide.
Hey, David, can I interrupt you? Charlie, can you go back to the very first slide with Freddie, because I don't think we got that up in time. I mean, again, I think it's interesting to see, you know, David's talking about innovations, the change in mix of the business. Obviously, you can see that with – that's just dramatic growth year over year for and just so people on the call understand and appreciate, PAH Retail is one-off, you know, flow business through Freddie Mac. And to see that grow year over year, 39%, that's a pretty impressive number. So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go back, advance a couple slides, Charlene. There we go.
Actually, go ahead. Go back for a second, Charlene. Cause Mark, I appreciate you, going back to that. Go back one more, if you would. Just so everyone knows, that TAH structured, right? So as Mark mentioned, TAH Retail is the kind of deal-by-deal flow business that constitutes the majority of the platform through our seller servicer network. And the structured business, just so people know what that is, that in that business we engage at the portfolio level. So we buy, wrap, or securitize portfolios of assets instead of asset by asset. So that's a unique part of our business platform that allows us to engage and kind of broaden our reach into the market. So if you would go forward two more slides, this is essentially all the tax exempt loan business from its inception, which was the end of 2014. So in just over 3 years, we've grown that business to over $3 billion. We've now done deals in 36 states, over 55 issuers, and really grown the tax-exempt loan business, I think, into being the national standard. We've had our first two securitizations of tax-exempt loans. So that's the unique proprietary securitization where we're passing on tax-exempt interest to our investors. They went off very well, and we were able to reduce our spreads as a result. So in our tax-exempt loan business, you've seen a number of notable innovations, including this year we rolled out a float to fixed, which works particularly well with acquisition rehabs. But the biggest innovation is probably the continued decrease in our spreads, which we were able to achieve because our securitizations were very successful and we're sourcing cheaper capital. So we're pleased with that, and we're looking to continue that growth into 2018. So moving to 2018, some other stuff that we're excited to have already rolled out. One new product that we're calling TAH Express, or Target Affordable Housing Express, which is focused on smaller transactions and that are generally less complex. We will have a streamlined execution with streamlined legal documents, streamlined legal due diligence, single third parties, where we think we're going to wring out costs in the neighborhood of 30 to 40% and cut turnaround time in about in half. So we are segregating that portion of our pipeline that can fit into TAH Express so we can move faster and cheaper on those smaller transactions, and we're real excited about that. The second major innovation
if I can interrupt just for a moment, because I'd like to maybe have Bob talk about 17, then I can have you both talk about innovations in 18, if that's okay.
That's perfect. Sounds good.
Yeah. So, Bob, I want to thank Bob because he got delayed on a plane, so he's dialing in. I think we can all hear him well. But, Bob, you want to maybe just kind of recap 2017 for Fannie Mae?
Sure, I'd love to. And Mark, thanks for having me. We obviously appreciate the partnership that we have with Citibank and partners like yourself, so thanks. Also like to say happy first day of spring to everybody. I don't know if anyone's counting, but it's 9 days till baseball season starts. And if your NCAA brackets are as broken as mine are, that's really the only thing you have to look forward to so far this month. So happy first day of spring. So from our highlights for 2017, it was a record production year. In our targeted affordable business, we did $5.4 billion worth of business. That represents roughly a 26% increase from last year when we did around $4.3 billion worth of business. So, you know, again, it was a great year. We certainly saw a significant increase. And a lot of that came from, I think what Dave said was right, there certainly was some disruption in the tax credit equity market, especially at the beginning of the year, that really caused some slowdown in the pipeline in the spring. You know, preservation has always been our bread and butter. It's the foundation of our business, and we continue to see, you know, strong performance in the preservation side. I think where we saw our growth really happened in three key areas outside of preservation. One was the bond business. Our MTEB business took off in 2017. That's our mortgage-backed security tax-exempt bond structure. Basically, what it does is it provides a single-asset MBS execution that we provide on all of our deals. But by using that as collateral for the bond, it provides all the benefits of tax-exempt bonds with the lower interest rate and the lower spread and significant savings over the life of the loan. So we were able to see the spreads come in significantly in the second, third, and fourth quarter of the year, and it really made it a great option for borrowers who are looking to take advantage of 4% tax credits and tax-exempt bonds. The other thing that helped really grow the business is we made the decision to reimburse borrowers for cost of issuance fees on MTEB transactions up to 0.75 point to reduce their out-of-pocket costs. A couple other things that I think really helped grow the business is, one, you know, we responded to some of the uncertainty in the market by making our flexible choice bridge suite of products, that's our capped ARM and our affordable SARMs, more flexible by reducing the lockout period from 1 year to 6 months. We also rolled out some enhancements to our suite of forward product offerings. Namely, our capital markets desk gotten back in the business of forward committing to buy the MBS on 9% unfunded forward commitments. So pricing went down significantly. We also restructured our good faith deposit requirements, reduced the upfront out-of-pocket costs for borrowers. And we also closed our very first MTEB unfunded forward deal and utilized our cost of issuance reimbursement program for that execution as well. And we expect that to continue to grow as we look to 2018. And finally, we continue to see a significant increase in the use of our structured credit facility execution for affordable. These facilities provide borrowers with a tremendous amount of flexibility to manage their portfolio so they can sell, acquire, rehab properties as needed. They allow borrowers to ladder maturities with multiple tranches of debt with varying terms. They can combine fixed and floating rate debt. They can have addition, release, and substitution provisions and relever the portfolio quickly with a borrow-up feature to really provide borrowers with the greatest possible flexibility to manage their portfolio. And we saw a significant amount of interest in that business over the course of last year. It represented over 10% of our total business in affordable, having just made the product available in the affordable suite just a couple years ago. So we're very excited about that. Obviously, both agencies published their duties to serve plan, you know, and we're very focused on making sure we can implement that. And finally, and probably a good bridge back to you, Mark, we were very excited, along with Dave and the guys at Freddie, to receive FHFA's approval to return to the tax credit equity business late last year. We're in the process of building out that team. Very excited that we've already closed our first $100 million fund investment for 2018.
Bob, great. Thanks for the recap, Bob. So let's talk about 2018 opportunities, and I think we might, you know, bounce around here because, that, you know, one of the things from the poll people are going to want to hear about LIHTC. You know, I'm going to, in a gentleman, I'll interrupt you or add my own opinion from time to time. Dave, I'm going to go to you, but you started to talk about TAH Express, and I'm not one of the things I want to make sure that gets emphasized to our audience is that is that's really an attempt to bring economies of scale of doing a tax-exempt financing to smaller size transactions. You know, a large $25 million deal can easily bear the cost of doing something tax-exempt. Your TAH Express is really is a product that is intended to help bring those economies to something that might not be $25 million, correct?
That's exactly right. But the focus is actually taxable, right? The focus is standard taxable mortgages as opposed to tax-exempt loans. And we've been able to, because it is a direct placement, we've been able to ring the, you know, a lot of the standard tax-exempt transaction costs out of our tax-exempt loan business already. So the TAH Express product is really focused on quick, low-cost refi or acquisition. So the focus specifically is $10 million and below. And the goal is to get deals up and down in about half time, we think as little as 9 days, and with much reduced transaction costs. To achieve that, we're going to single reports, right? So we'll have a engineering or cost review or done as part of the appraisal. And we're also truncating at all environmental reviews to really get to a much quicker and cheaper execution for those smaller deals.
Great. So what do you see as 2018 opportunities, Dave?
So I think that's a big one, right? I mean, traditionally our deal size has skewed larger. That's going to help us more efficiently get to some of the smaller transactions out there. And in so doing, I think it's a really important mission focus as well, because it helps us provide, you know, cheaper capital for preservation of those smaller transactions. That's one. Another is LIHTC. So we are in the LIHTC business. We're thrilled to be. We, like Fannie Mae, have approval to do as much as $500 million, and we intend to do as much of that as we think we can while adding value to the industry. So our focus is going to be on markets and projects that are not as well served. We want to make sure that we are adding stability to those markets that don't get, you know, multiple highly competitive bids, and we provide that stability across cycles to make sure that, you know, the market remains liquid for tax-credit equity investments. So we're real excited about that. We're in the process now of selecting syndicators. We will be focusing that business primarily on proprietary investing through syndicators. And again, we're looking at our first funds as we speak, and we'll be making commitments before the end of the second quarter.
Great. Bob, let's go to you. What are you looking at and seeing as opportunities in 2018?
Sure. So, you know, I think, you know, obviously we're going to stay focused on preservation from one side of the business. It's always been a mainstay of the affordable business. You know, over the past several years, we've rolled out a number of product enhancements to support that market. You know, one of the benefits, people will debate how many benefits there are to being at Fannie Mae for a long time, but one of the benefits to being there for a long time is I've been able to roll around the different types of businesses and spend a lot of time managing our small loan business as well as our structured finance business. And what we were able to do about 2 years ago was take our streamlined execution for small affordable and for small loans and combine that with the way in which we look at affordable deals. It allowed us to really streamline the execution of small affordable deals back then. And, you know, obviously it's been a significant source of business for us. We're going to stay focused on that market. We think it's a critical market to focus on, and we like those deals. We also offer declining prepay options on all of our affordable products. It allows borrowers a greater deal of flexibility as they're looking at potential refinance or re-syndication events. So we're very happy about that. I think, you know, one of the things that we're obviously very excited about is the tax credit equity business. We're very pleased to have gotten out of the gate quickly. We closed our first $100 million tax credit fund with Raymond James about a month and a half ago. The fund will focus on investments in underserved Native American and rural markets, and also supporting affordable housing recovery efforts for areas impacted by Hurricane Harvey. And what's really kind of interesting about this fund is that for the Hurricane Harvey properties, the fund will actually support the inclusion of features that make the properties more disaster resilient in the future. So things like the mechanicals getting put on the roof, backup generators, all these things so that the next hurricane does not have as severe an impact on the property or the residents of the folks who live there. I think the other area of innovation, Mark, that we've really been focused on is looking at ways in which we can focus not just on the properties we finance, but also on the people who live in the properties that we finance. And towards that end, because we think that where you live plays a real critical role in your overall health and well-being. So we've really focused on making investments in borrowers who are supporting residents. We announced a Healthy Housing Rewards platform last year. We're rolling it out in full force this year. It provides pricing incentives for borrowers to do one of two things. Borrowers who either commit to making design features at the property level that create more positive health outcomes for renters. If borrowers will commit to doing that and get what's called a Fitwell certification, they get 15 basis points off their interest rate of their loan. The second piece provides a financial incentive for property owners who are committed to pay for enhanced resident services at their affordable properties. So things that, you know, improve access to health care, give renters more access to community services such as financial education and job training, all those things are real critical to making sure that a deeply affordable property is stable and sustainable, but it costs money. So as part of Healthy Housing Rewards, a certified borrower can get up to $75,000 per year for the life of the loan to support enhanced resident services at the properties we finance. So we're very excited about those product enhancements as well. And we think it's critical that, you know, as we continue to look at ways to address the affordable housing crisis, that we stay focused on making sure that the people who are living in the properties are given the greatest chance possible to succeed.
Hey Bob, for people who are interested in that, where might they find information? Are your Dust Seller Servicer or your Dust Lenders conversant on that, or is there a place on your website they could go?
Absolutely. I would go to Fannie Mae MultifamilyAffordable.com or just FannieMaeMultifamily.com and click on the affordable link. And you'll find the Healthy Housing Rewards landing page there, or just contact one of your Dust Lenders. We've been doing trainings with our Dust Lenders throughout the course of the last few months, and they should be up to speed on the product, and if not, they definitely know who to call.
Great. Hey, before we talk more about LIHTC, let me, and I apologize for this, we didn't talk about this, so I'm going to ask a question, and hopefully you'll have answers and you'll agree to come back next year when we do this again. But I just came back from an event that, you know, I mean, the buzz and the discussion was from very well-heeled developers, how do we make workforce housing work? And one of the, you know, questions that you start out with is, what's the definition of workforce housing? But let's just suggest it's something that might be, you know, have some affordable and then mixed income from 80 to 120% of AMI. What are your agencies doing relative to looking to help create solutions and capital for workforce? And I'll put you on the spot first, Dave.
Sure. Thanks. I'm glad to be here. Hey, I think it's a vital need right now, and it's one that we're hearing a lot about as well. And more owner-operators are interested in workforce housing, right, or sort of playing in that maybe B, you know, Class B space and maintaining affordability over the long term. We're thinking about it in a couple different ways. First, preservation, right? So supporting those owner-operators that want to do some value add, but also want to focus on helping the existing tenants remain in place. And then secondly, what can we do to help facilitate new construction, right? So on the former, we're in discussions with our regulator now about a mezzanine product where we could get higher in the capital stack to support maintaining affordability in workforce housing, right? So that's a product that would get us from 80% to 90% LTV, it would be coupled with a rider to the mortgage that would maintain affordability levels at that workforce level and protect against rapid retenanting, really trying to protect the existing tenants. And what I hear from interested owners, borrowers, is that, you know, lots of times that maintaining the tenancy is really the better long-term economic play as well. And then in terms of, you know, new construction, one of the things that we're newly focused on is mixed-income housing, not only owner-operators, but also a growing number of jurisdictions, cities, and really want to promote mixed-income housing to maintain, you know, workforce levels, some LIHTC, and a mix. And we're doing a number of things to support that. I'll highlight one. And that is, at the end of last year, we rolled out a product that enhances LIHTC investment in a mixed-income property, right? So historically, those investments have not been preferred by LIHTC investors for a variety of reasons. If Freddie Mac is providing the senior debt on such a property, we can provide an enhancement to, as a rider to the mortgage, to protect a LIHTC investor in the event of a foreclosure, so they can get out whole. And what we've seen that do is facilitate greater interest in the tax credit equity investment, so there's a greater equity raise to make those mixed income properties more viable.
Great. Thank you, Dave. Bob, and your description of your program is what would cause me to think about workforce housing, but what else is Fannie thinking about or doing in the workforce housing space?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think, first of all, the term workforce housing is kind of misleading, right? Because if you think about, you know, renters who make less than 60% AMI, they're in the workforce too. And so I think as we think about it, we don't think about it as much of, it's from the term of workforce housing, but really middle market housing, which is what it is. Okay. And if you think about it, you know, the number of moderate income renters, and those are folks who are earning between like 80 and 120% of their area median income, you know, the number's been rising steadily since the end of the recession. There's about 8 million renter households that are in that moderate income space. Right? They make too much to qualify for subsidized housing, but they're increasingly burdened by increasing housing costs. I mean, the interesting thing is that if you look at the number of units that are affordable to moderate income renters, there's actually an ample supply of rental housing units. According to the American Community Survey, there's a surplus of 2.2 million rental units for moderate income renter households. And the reason why this is that there are almost 3 million units. There's a 3 million unit shortfall for renters who make less than 50% of their area median income, and 5 million units for households who make less than 30% of their area median income. So we don't have enough housing for folks who make less than 50% AMI. And as a result, those folks are moving up into the middle market. And not only are they rent burdened, but they're, you know, creating this supply-demand imbalance that's causing rents to rise. So, you know, we think that the most important thing you can do to address this middle market housing is to build more affordable units at the lower end of the income spectrum. Obviously, tax credit equity will get you there. Making sure that we're supporting, you know, funded and unfunded forward commitments will get you there. But that's really one of the most important things if you want to solve the problem. The second thing is you need to work more with state and local housing initiatives. one of the things that we did last year in recognition of the fact that you see more and more state and local governments getting involved in this type of housing is we provide pricing breaks across the board to any property that comes in participation with the state and local housing initiative that restricts rents or restricts income. Up to 20% at 80 is our standard, but we'll look at variances across the income spectrum depending on what that community might need or might define as meeting that middle market housing. So we're very focused on this issue.
Great. You guys talked a little bit about LIHTC, but I know that's a big interest of folks on the phone here. Bob, you've got a syndicator relationship. David, you're in the process, you said, of interviewing. Are you going to have will there be a single syndicator, multiple syndicators, and how do people on the phone get a handle on how to do LIHTC business with the agencies, and then also if there are, I know we have this issue, if you have any issues relative to substantial user and being able to do 4% and also do the perm financing?
Sure. So it will be more than one syndicator. There'll be 5 to 8-ish. We want to maintain, relevance with, a select few syndicators, and we'll advance based on success with given funds. So, but we'll start out with about 5 to 8 this year, and our goal is to again focus on underserved markets. We do have the opportunity to make investments broadly. So we're going to be, I think the market is going to experience us as, I'll say a mission-focused yield investor, right? I mean, in the LIHTC market, there's lots of discussion of a bifurcated market with CRA investors and yield investors, and we're going to be something in between. We're obviously focused on yield. We want market return for the risk we're taking. But at the same time, we're going to be highly mission-focused and looking to serve that part of the market that is not served as well as others today. So it's almost easier to talk about where we're unlikely to go because we can potentially go anywhere that where we see instability or need for us. We are unlikely to bid on that subset of transactions that are in the hottest market and the most sought after, just because that part of the market doesn't need us. We're not adding the value there that we would be in those markets that need the stability. So that's our focus. You bring up an interesting point about substantial user. That is a concern of ours because our tax-exempt loan is a flagship product, and it's been, I think, very valuable to the market generally, as represented by my earlier slide. We have a couple of different ways that we anticipate working around that. One is because our tax-exempt loan is a securitization model, we can own a tax-exempt loan and have it be taxable for a period before syndication. So that is one way around it. And then we're going to work with syndicators to come up with a variety of other solutions. And look, our goal with that is that our borrowers or our partners in the context of a LIHTC investment don't have to worry about that. That's something that we're going to come to the market with solutions to.
Yeah, I would just say, just to echo most of what Dave said, the only thing I'd add is that, our first investment was with one syndicator, it's Raymond James. We do anticipate doing business with more than one syndicator, and we do anticipate to have a mix of proprietary funds as well as investing in multi-investor funds as well.
Great. Thank you. Well, gentlemen, I'm gonna ask you my last question, and then we'll go to some Q&A. But as we looked at the poll coming into this discussion, there were a number of people that have done business with the agencies, but there were a greater amount that hadn't done business with the agencies. And so, you know, kind of my question for both of you is, you know, what advice do you have to our participants about doing business with the agencies in terms of, you know, approach or process? What's the secret sauce to doing business with Fannie and Freddie? Start with you, Bob.
Sure. I mean, it's pretty simple. I think show us your deal. We work with nearly 30 different DUS lenders across the country, all of whom have very experienced and highly capable originators in the affordable lending business. And so I would say, number one, show us your deal, and we'll do whatever we can to win it. The second thing I would say is make sure that you're also getting a Freddie Mac quote and a bank quote. You know, go out and find as many different opportunities to finance your deal as possible and choose the one that's best for you. You know, hopefully that's a Fannie Mae execution, but in the end, you know, if you can get affordable financing for your deal, then the market wins, and that's what we care about. One of the differences on a Fannie Mae execution is we do what's called a single asset MBS execution. So every single deal we do, we securitize in a mortgage-backed security. That allows us a tremendous amount of flexibility on a deal-by-deal basis to underwrite and structure your loan in a way that works for you. And obviously that's very important in the affordable space because it's just hard to find cookie-cutter deals in the affordable space. So a single asset MBS execution works very, very well. And because of the way in which we work with our DUS lenders, we have a risk-sharing partnership with them. So they take a third of the risk. We take two-thirds of the risk. And we hold that credit risk for the life of the loan. So when you do a business with Fannie Mae and you close a loan with us and our DUS lender, we're with you all the way until that loan matures. So if you ever have an asset management issue, if you ever looking for a transfer or anything like that, we always know who to call, and we have a life of the loan relationship that we're very, very passionate about, and we feel very, very strongly about that model. I think the best thing to do is go out in the market and get as many quotes as you can, hopefully with the best one, but if not, go for it.
And you have focusing people to your website, you've got a list of all your DUS lenders on that on your website, so people could certainly go start there. Or you could call Cindy, but there's a great list on the website of all the DUS lenders. Dave, how about you? What's the secret sauce to doing business with Freddie?
Hey, well, look, I think Bob said it well. It is important to, you know, give us a look, and I think the market has benefited from competition. One of the things that I think is that sometimes the agencies get pigeonholed, or people think of us as like doing one thing but not another. And the truth is, we have a much broader array of products than many people realize, particularly because we've been investing so much to broaden our product set over the last couple of years. So one of the things I tell my team here is that we're doing best when people call us that don't know exactly what they want yet, right? That are still sort of thinking through what might be the best execution. And by bringing us in early, you know, through a seller servicer, obviously, and having that initial dialogue before everything is set, oftentimes we can suggest structures or add value to the initial structuring of a deal. As you point out, our list of seller servicers, we have 17, is up on our website, so folks can have a look at that. And you know, I think the most important thing is to, you know, maybe bring us in a little earlier than you think, so we can suggest some alternatives that might not have otherwise been top of mind.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's the secret sauce for any lending opportunity is talk to your lender, whether it's, you know, a DUS lender, whether it's a seller servicer for Freddie, life company, bank, you know, talk to them sooner than later, because you do, get some innovative thinking that may be able to help address issues for your twist. I mean, I'm always surprised within our shop that clients will say, "Hey, gosh, I have a big issue here," and we've probably seen that issue before, or Fannie's seen that issue before, or Freddie's seen that issue before. Doesn't mean that we have a favorable outcome, but we generally always have an idea how to address it. So, talk early. Operator, we're going to go to Q&A, and I've got a couple of questions over email, so I'll go with those first. But if you could remind people of the instructions on how to queue up for a question.
Thank you. And if you'd like to ask a question over the phone lines, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on the phone line will indicate when your line is open. Please state your name before posing your question.
Great. A couple of questions that came in over email. The first one, actually, I don't know the answer to, so I'll be curious. Any information on the ongoing funding of the Capital Magnet Fund?
Yeah, I would say that the Capital Magnet Fund is a CDFI program through the Department of Treasury, so it's not really something that, you know, either of the agencies have anything to do with, so I'm not sure we can answer that either.
Okay. This next question I think we will be able to answer, and it's, what are the current rules on allowing sub-debt behind agency financing? Any discussions on changing this? Maybe I'll describe what I think are the rules, and you guys can correct me where I can go wrong, and then give your thoughts on changing. Basically, from a lender standpoint, sub-debt, from an underwriting standpoint, sub-debt is treated much better when it is soft pay. But I think the rules are you can have a non-foreclosable mortgage, 75% of cash flow, or 25% of cash flow needs to go to the partner after the payment of sub-debt. Sub-debt needs to extend beyond the maturity of the agency loan. And we see some sub-debt. I guess it also depends upon if it is governmental sub-debt or if it is third-party hard pay sub-debt. So I guess, you know, maybe Dave, correct me where I went wrong, and what do you think about sub-debt behind Freddie Mac deals?
Yeah, actually, Mark, you largely got it right. I'd say, you know, as many as 50% of our deals do involve sub-debt, so we get comfortable with sub-debt all the time. We do look at it differently if it's soft versus hard pay, and we do prefer sub-debt that's from, you know, governmental or quasi-governmental sources, and if the purpose is to really enhance affordable housing, right? So lots of preservation deals also include subordinate financing that helps garner additional tax equity, right? We view that favorably as well. And as, you know, preservation deals are getting tougher and tougher, we're seeing, you know, a lot more of that. And I'd say the majority of those deals do, in fact, have sub-debt. So we allow it all the time. We have kind of standard policies, and, you know, Mark just went through them, so I don't need to reiterate those. But I think, you know, to the extent a deal has a different type of sub-debt or maybe a particularly complex sub-debt structure or subordinate ground lease or unsubordinate ground lease, it's another example of where bringing us in earlier can often add value.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, I'm going to ask you to answer the question, but then let me throw a twist on that question was asked. Are you guys seeing a noticeable increase in third-party for-profit sub-debt?
I can't say for sure, Bob, we'll go to you with
sub-debt and then the extra credit question.
Yeah, I mean, generally on the sub-debt question, I think that, you know, the agencies see that and look at that issue in a very similar manner, and I think Mark nailed it. Obviously, sub-debt that's soft pay is much easier than hard pay, but, you know, we will take a look at any option and work on it on a deal-by-deal basis if need be. We haven't seen, at least to my knowledge, a significant increase in third party. I think we have seen more sub-debt, and a lot of that's due to the fact that you're getting less tax credit equity into your deal. And, you know, borrowers are the deals are getting a little more complicated with sub-debt structures, but it's nothing that that we haven't been able to work through.
Operator, do we have any questions on the phone?
There are currently no questions over the phone lines.
Okay. I got one more over email. This question is about kind of pricing and market dynamics, and it's one that I'll answer first and then ask Bob and Dave to give their thoughts. But the question is, what could happen in 2018 to adjust? The question is about G fees, but I'll just say, you know, credit fees and investor pricing spreads. And, you know, certainly I think the, you know, it was interesting. I mentioned I had came back from something with some clients about a week or so ago, and a similar question was asked. And, you know, the reality is the prognostication as to where the 10-year, which would be the bellwether for pricing on a lot of both our products and Freddie products and the Fannie products, you know, I think our economists had projected about an, you know, a 2.8 10-year at the end of the year. The street consensus was something like a 3.3. I think I just read something, you know, the other day about a 3.4. But, you know, I think certainly for us, the biggest issue is not what, you know, Fannie does or Freddie does or what Citi does, but it's just simply reacting to what happens in the market. And I think everybody is probably comfortable with, we're probably in a rising rate environment, and that's going to cause generally rates to move. It's funny, we talk to our clients and we tell them to basically take the money and run. If the deal works today, you should focus on getting it up and down and closed, because it, you know, may not work 60 days from now. So, Bob or Dave, anything that you want to add on that in terms of maybe investor spreads?
Yeah, I'd certainly echo your points that, you know, the bigger issue seems to be the index, you know, volatility or index increases itself. When you get a spread from Freddie Mac, you get just one spread, and within there is both a G fee and an investor spread. And, you know, we lock that. One of the values we provide is we lock that spread for either 90 or 120 days. So there is, you know, once you lock a spread with us, there is no volatility that you incur but for the index itself, right? So there's no investor spread because we bear that cost and the volatility of that investor spread, and then lay it off or source our capital through securitizations. We've seen the investor spreads in those securitizations decline as of date, as of this year. So as the index has gone up, investor spreads have actually tightened a little bit, which has allowed us to offset it with our spreads. So that's been a positive trend that we hope continues, but we're not sure it's going to offset the rising index we're seeing.
Yeah, I would say something very similar. I think, you know, the one difference is in the way in which we securitize, you know, our products. We have a single asset securitization, and so the investor spread is coming from a third-party investor typically, though our capital markets desk does, you know, act as a market maker and you know, provides bids on deals when the market is low on liquidity. What we've found over the course of the last few years is that as we've built our MBS investor base so that more and more MBS investors are comfortable with the DUS MBS and affordable MBS and green MBS, the more investors you have coming into the market, the less volatility you have in spreads, and the delta between high and low gets a lot narrower. And so we've, you know, seen spreads continue to come in. We've seen significant spread compression in our MTEB product, our mortgage-backed security tax-exempt bond product, which has helped us gain a lot of traction this year. And we've also been able to attract a lot of new investors into our MBS business. We in the green space, I know we didn't talk a lot about green on the call, but you know, we did over $28 billion worth of green MBS last year. We were actually the largest issuer of green bonds, not just in the country, but in the entire world in 2017. And that's allowed us to open up a whole new market of MBS investors from across the world who are looking now to buy Fannie Mae DUS MBS. And that's allowed spreads to really stabilize. And you don't see that volatility that you might have seen 10 years ago.
Hey, Bob, that makes me think. I know we didn't spend a lot of time on green, but I will just say for the audience you know, green, you should understand green. You should talk to your lender about green to understand what it takes and then what the benefits are, because I think with both Fannie and Freddie, you see significant benefits from utilizing their green financing program, whether that's pricing or leverage. But it is, it's been a bellwether product for both organizations, and I think it's something that people in the affordable space probably can look to layer onto their financing relatively easily. So you should understand green. We've got a question, Sergey. I just forwarded your question to Bob and Dave, and I'll let them respond to you privately. It's about a state HFA becoming a seller servicer. So we'll just, I've sent that on and we'll let them respond back to you. Let's see. We've got time for another question or two. This isn't a question, but Peter Lawrence from Novogradic was kind enough to send some information on the Capital Magnet Fund. Brian Samples from Mercy, we will forward this out to you. So, maybe we can send it to anybody who registered for the webinar. But Peter, thank you very much for the assistance there. Let's see.
I'm just impressed that Peter graced us with his presence today.
I think there's another question that I'm going to defer on. Operator, anything on the telephone?
No, there are currently no questions over the phone lines.
Okay. Earl Chase, I'll forward your question directly to both Bob and David. So I'm going to end as we began and thank Bob and David for their time in doing this today. Also thank them for their support of us, but probably more importantly, their support and their organization's support in the affordable housing space. And as they talked about, they're doing it a lot of ways on the debt side. Very excited that they're doing it now on the equity side. So, you know, Fannie and Freddie are significant sources of capital in the affordable housing space. With that, I will thank you again for joining. Thank everybody on the phone for dialing in. As we mentioned, this will be up on our website in a replay within about 24 hours, as well as the individual's contact information. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, David. Thank you, Charlene.
And this does conclude today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.